Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We are back. Another edition of the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast. We've upgraded equipment. We know what's going on. And Ricky, it is crazy because it's raining in LA. So because we can't golf, let's do a podcast, right? How you doing?
Good, man. How are you? I'm glad we're back. We have some exciting news. I've just been golfing the shit out of it. And being a dad. Baseball's back, we're about two weeks into spring training, two or three weeks, but it's good to have baseball back. Obviously the Dodgers coming off a World Series title, LA still feeling high, our group chat still on fire over the Bauer site, the Bauer signing,
these guys,
all that good stuff. So yeah man it's exciting. It's exciting times now that baseball's back.
Yeah, and just to let everybody know, we do appreciate you sticking with us and on the Instagram of Let's Go Ricky Rowe. I know you've been leaving me a comment. And for those of you wondering how come Ricky doesn't answer you on the Instagram at Let's Go Ricky Rowe, it's because I'm the one in charge of the account. It's not Ricky. So some of you have been sending some messages like, hey, if I send you some stuff, will you autograph it? Like, it's going to come to me. So I'll autograph you Ricky stuff. No problem. But we do appreciate you guys leaving messages and checking with us and sticking with us. And so some of you have been wondering, like, damn, Bethel, what's going on? The last episode we had was December 16th, and it was a great episode with our friend Manny Barreda, who was pitching down in Mexico. We got to have a part two with him. But that day, just to update people, Ricky, is the day I tested positive for COVID, right?
Yeah.
Remember, so I was doing the podcast in San Antonio because I was going to work the Canelo fight. Felt great. They knocked on my door, and they're like, hey, you got to go. You're positive. I'm like, no, I'm not. I just did an hour-long podcast. I feel great. No problem. I had a drive back from San Antonio to Los Angeles. I ended up getting it a couple days later where the symptoms kicked in. I stayed in Phoenix for a while. So I was on the shelf for a good month where I didn't golf. I didn't run. I didn't do nothing. But now we're back. We're ready to go. And just talking with Ricky, like, okay, we've done the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast. We actually started it 2 years ago. Still trying to figure out exactly what we could do. And the stories are great. But we're like, you know what? Let's catch up with some old friends. Guys that we met the first year or the first weekend. Because remember, the first weekend what we did is our good friend Marco, our accountant, who our CPA, our CFO, he hooked it all up. We went down to Arizona. It was his idea for you and I to rent a house. And he's like, just get everybody there. So we had Noe Ramirez come through. But the guy who came in and became a quick fan favorite on the podcast, Josh Tolley, was there, a guy you played with. And this dude, when he left the house, dude, it felt like we were like a 12-round fight because so much energy he brought, right? He was ready to go.
Yeah, he was ready to go. And and I told you guys, wait till you guys meet this guy.
Awesome.
And all that good stuff. And it turned out to be like a great episode. I think it was at the end of the night. Ace was grilling on the grill. We were eating. It was a good time. And it almost seems like it was so long ago.
Yes.
Because of all the stuff that's happened with the pandemic and all those things going on, it seems like it's been like 5 years ago since we did that. But again, like I said, it's good to be back. Now I have a headset, I have a microphone. You know, it's like we're upgrading all of a sudden, and we want to do this right. It's something that me and you have been talking about it. And then obviously Josh came in the conversation, and I mean, you want to let them know?
Yeah, no, we ain't telling him nothing. Because look at this dude. He came in with his own fancy studio. He is so legit. 3 years ago, actually it was 2 years ago, episode number 6, if you guys want to go back and check out, it was a pro catcher, Josh Tolley, at that time was in the Dodgers organization, and then now he's officially retired, but he is here on the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast. Tolley, holy smokes, you have a studio?
Let's go, boy.
Where are you?
I am in WEBO, upstate New York. The guy that owns the radio station has been so generous to let me come into the studio. I've done some stuff for Sportsnet out of Toronto, and I come in here. I have the headset, the mic, webcam. He dialed me in. I can't thank this guy enough. I owe him a ton because this makes my life so much easier, and it makes doing this stuff fun.
Dude, Rick. Like, I don't know if we can do a podcast with this guy.
No, yeah. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna bring Josh along to, and we're gonna call it the Let's Go Ricky Roll and Josh Tolley podcast with Beto Duran.
Yeah,
he's gonna be the new addition. I'm excited about it. I always, and this is me and Josh talking prior to this, and I was like, you know what? It'll be good that we bring in a catcher, because a catcher is on defense. Has to build a relationship with the pitcher, and he has to hit at the same time. I don't know shit about hitting. You know, I got 2 hits in the show, but that's about it. You know, I can't tell you what the guy's thinking when he's at the plate with runners in scoring position in a big situation and all that stuff. So I think it's good addition. And also, you know, if he hits a home run, how it feels going back there and catching your stud ace or your number 2, 3, 4 guy, whoever it is. Or when you strike out with the bases loaded, you know, and there's it's a mix of emotions. I feel like when you're a catcher, and there's a lot of ups, there's a lot of downs. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to build that relationship with your pitchers and make sure they're comfortable. So I think he's a great addition. I'm excited about it, and you know, we just take it on from here, and it should be really fun.
Yes, go ahead, Tolley.
I'm fired up. Without getting the serious stuff out of the way real quick, I need Ace to be barbecuing the food.
And you'll hear that.
Where's the Ace of SoCal at right now?
Oh, we hate to break it to you, Tolley. Okay, so behind it, you know how there's always in their circles, there's always a guy that does something. The guy that will show up no matter what. So when we did the actual Let's Go Ricky Roll inaugural weekend, our good friend, the Ace of SoCal, was on the grill while we were doing the podcast. He had the carne asada going, tortillas. And as soon as it ended, Tolley was grubbing, having a great time. He was ready to go to spring training and hit 3 jacks the next day. We have bad news for you, Tolley. The Ace of SoCal no longer exists. He's now Anthony of Orange County. He has a fiance. He's now an Angels fan. He is sometimes a sports fan. He's having actually. He's going to steakhouses now. He's a fancy guy. He's cultured. So
wait, is he still your friend?
He's on the outside looking in right now, man.
What do you call him again? The what of Orange County? Anthony of Orange County?
Yeah.
He took away that nickname.
Yeah, he's like, you know, hopefully the Dodgers don't do this where you win a World Series and you rest on your laurels and you kind of go back. Ace won a World Series. He said, forget it. I'm shutting it down. It's over, guys. I'm done. Got to go. He has a weekend house. He has all that. Yeah, so.
His girlfriend is a huge Angel fan, so. Yeah.
That's what changes mine?
Probably. Well, yeah, well, you know. Yeah, so
I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you.
He's in the group chat, but he just doesn't quite answer all the time. So,
that's okay.
You know,
we'll get him back. We'll get him back. He'll be fine. Just be patient, boys. Be patient.
Tolley, what's up with you? Last time we talked, you were wearing this uniform. Look at that. Look at that beauty right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the duck. Right. You were the Dodgers organization, and then they sent you to Oklahoma, beautiful OKC. And what happened 2 years ago? Update us on the Josh Tolley experience.
Well, I got traded to the Angels, so Anthony of Orange County would have been excited about that one. And then 2020, I signed with the Yankees, went to their alternate site all year, and then comes off season, jobs are hard to get, and I am looking to move on to the next phase of my life. I mean, you can only run around minor league baseball for so long and feel committed to doing that when you got three kids at home and a wife that's running a business. It does become challenging. So here we are now. I'm fired up to do the radio stuff and the podcast. And this is where I feel like I belong, guys.
So you're officially retired? No more baseball?
Well, I didn't sign the paperwork. I'll never sign the paperwork. Pero, it's called quitting. It's called quitting. It's not called retiring.
Okay, explain that one.
Hey, I haven't signed no paperwork either.
Really?
Like,
yeah, I never did.
Guys, I always say, like, Derek Jeter retires. Todd Helton retires. Josh Tolley has to quit.
Wait, Rick, you didn't sign paperwork either, Rick?
No, I didn't. Everything was just announcement on Instagram, and that was it. I mean, there's nothing really to sign. I don't know there is.
Yeah, I think maybe you have to file with the league if you never want to play again, but you just hold on to it. In like 3 years, they might call me back to catch a knuckleballer.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So Tolley, you're transitioning into the broadcast phase of your career. What are you doing? Wait, first of all, you said upstate New York. Like, where?
Near Binghamton.
Okay. Binghamton is near where?
Binghamton. Like, nowhere.
Binghamton was in the Eastern League.
Yeah.
That's where we used the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, the double-A team. That's where we would go and play right there.
Okay, hold on. I got to, like, go on the map and look. Just keep talking, Tolley, whatever it is you're doing. Because most guys retire to Arizona and golf every day. You're in upstate New York with snow?
Shoveling 44 inches of snow right before Christmas.
Oh.
That was a grind. And we still have snow on the ground, but it is going to be 50 this week. So we are... We're looking up. We're seeing a little grass on the ground, which is a good start to spring.
Okay. All right. I see it. You're like south of Syracuse.
It's like central New York.
Okay. All right. South Central.
I want to know, and this is because we haven't really had a guest yet that talked about this. How was life in the bubble? You were at the Yankees last year. How was that? I mean, it had to have been different than you've ever experienced ever in your life, obviously, for everyone. But how was that, like, having to be just in one site?
Well, let me step back, Ricky, because I think the strangest part was in spring training when the coronavirus became prevalent in the United States. We had doctors meeting with us. We had Brian Cashman met with us, all the front office guys, and nobody knew what it looked like. Well, Once it got canceled, spring training 1.0, we all came home and we were all left kind of to figure out what was next. And there was very little communication amongst baseball as to what was going to happen. And then we get put into the bubble in New York. They finally say it's a go. We go to New York. We get put into a hotel. They split it between two hotels. And you were not allowed to leave. You got on the bus, went to the ballpark, got your food, practiced, came home, did it all over again the next day. It was the strangest spring training I've ever had in my life, and I think anybody will ever have.
What the heck?
Well, how often were you guys getting tested?
Every other day. We were doing a spit test. So what I found was strange is we'd do the spit test, and then we wouldn't find out for 2 days if we were positive or negative. So you effectively could spit, be positive, and then you're around the players every day for the next 2 days, and then find you got a positive test, and then that group had to quarantine.
What? And
it was very stressful when it came to like batting practice. You were very cautious as to who you hung out with around the batting cage and shagging balls and all of that.
But totally.
Where was the alternate site at? for the New York Yankees?
Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is only an hour from my house. So I was very fortunate. The Yankees were generous enough to let me live at home while doing it. Wow. Still getting tested every other day. But I mean, it was a mix of players that could go help the big league team, and then it was a mix of players of prospects, and that navigating that piece of it from Jordy Mercer's, Danny Duffy's, myself, to having 18-year-old young high school pitchers, young Latin American pitchers, all in the same room effectively, was a great learning experience, I think, for everybody. We tried to make the most of it, and the Yankees did such a great job of making that time fun. I mean, they could have made it miserable. They really could have. I've talked to some guys at other alt sites, and they said it was awful. And we had the opposite. We had so much fun doing it, and I was living at home, so maybe that's part of the reason.
Totally, but the alternate site is where you go in hopes of doing stuff. But normally, as a ball player, you're getting ready for a game. It kind of sounds like you were just practicing, like back when you were like in extended spring training, or like it's like a full on spring training. So how do you stay motivated to show up every day and be like, dude, what are we working out for? Like, usually there's a goal at the end, but what is this?
That's what it was, Beto. There was no goal. There was no 0-for-4s.
Wow.
I mean, my wife said, "You ever get out?" I said, "No, no, it didn't count, so I didn't get out."
You know? It definitely is strange, though, talking to a lot of guys about it. Obviously, never on the podcast. That's why I want to know your thoughts. And I always like talking to them. Like, they're like, "Yeah, it's just like almost like, yeah, you play, you get on the bus, you go to your hotel, you stay in your hotel, they bring your food, you come out, you do the exact same thing." And it's like, man, I couldn't imagine, you know, guys who were struggling, guys who got off to slow starts and just couldn't get going, and then being alone and not being around your family, all that stuff probably added up, and it couldn't have been a good mental situation, I guess.
I would imagine. I mean, like I said, I never made an out, so it didn't matter. But I think the guys that got off the slow starts that are used to having 162 games to figure it out, and the numbers, effectively the numbers will never lie, right? Like, the baseball card always paints the picture. But over 60 games, you get off to a bad start, Ricky. You're right. You're sitting in your hotel room by yourself wondering if you're ever going to be able to do this again.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, and a lot of guys, and you and I know, Josh, that a lot of guys, 60 games in, they can be hitting 210, and then, like, that second half of the year, they just something cleans up, they figure something out, and next thing you know, they're up to 280. And you weren't able to do that this past year, and that's why you know, hopefully every protocol gets taken this season, and there's no issues with it, so that we see a long season and we see what these teams can do, because there's a lot of fun teams around the league this year that loaded up with either pitching or hitting. The Dodgers obviously added a great pitcher in Bauer, and but that wasn't the only big time move. You know, there was like sneaky little moves, the White Sox adding Liam Hendricks, who you and I know, Liam was a triple-A guy, bubble guy, up and down in the big leagues, had gotten released, had gotten designated for assignment a few times, and now the guy's like an all-star closer and got paid big time. Good for him. He's another guest here on this podcast. So it's just good to see, like, the additions that these teams made, and now we get to see, you know, hopefully a whole season and see what transpires.
I am very excited to see 162. I want to see how many games the Dodgers are going to win this year. I think they have a shot to win 110 games. I think.
Come on.
Yeah, I think they're that good. That pitching is dominating.
Wow.
I mean, and then you look at what San Diego did, and it's like, it's just going to be a fun rivalry. It's just going to be really cool to see that. You know, L.A., San Diego, I mean, it's separated by an hour and a half drive. It's, you know, it's...
Man, they're not rivals. They're not rivals.
Well, it's going to turn it turned into a little bit of a rivalry.
It's a, okay, the 30 Padre fans are woofing, and then the Dodger fans are – but then it's like all these Dodger fans are worried about what they're doing. It's like, well, you guys won a World Series. You fans are worried about all that other stuff. Who cares? Tolley, let's go back to you, though. This is the Josh Tolley show today. Forget the –
All right.
Hey, because we can go and do real baseball talk, all that other stuff anywhere else. But, Tolley, this is pretty cool perspective for you. You got to wear a Dodger uniform and a Yankees uniform. Like, the most storied franchises in baseball, two of the best out there. What was that like, putting on pinstripes?
I mean, I started my career with the Mets, so it was a bit strange at the very onset of it. But when you walk through the doors of the clubhouse, you realize how many retired numbers are and how many Hall of Famers have walked through the – not the same door, but effectively the same door. Kind of a cliche type of thing, but it is. I mean, they have. I found this so cool in spring training when you walk to the training room from the clubhouse. They have pictures of all the Hall of Famers, and they all wrote. You know, most of them wrote little notes, and I just reading the history of what it is to be a Yankee was fascinating. It is first class organization, no doubt.
Yeah,
I just want to know if your painting has arrived.
Why are you stirring the pot, Ricky?
Well, you mentioned that you play for the Mets. Johan Santana threw a no-hitter, and in episode number 6, Tolley talked about how Johan said he was going to send you a painting. 2 years later, and I know that, you know, sometimes Amazon is backed up and they'll lose packages. Has the Johan painting shown up?
No, Poppy, I'm waiting.
Johan, I'm gonna shoot him a text and be like, "Listen, dude, I'm talking to Tolley right now. Where's this painting?
You know what?
Where's my painting?
Johan, we have a new podcast. We need the painting, Poppy. Right? We need to get that. That's my star, Tolley. See how he treats you right away, first episode?
Boys, think how good that would look right back here.
Let's sit here. Right there. Look, we could have a calendar or a painting of you catching a no-hitter.
Yeah. Well, hey, Ricky, see if Johan needs my new address.
Hey, Tolley. Now, of course, we talked to you 2 years ago. You were in the Dodgers organization. You were there in Oklahoma City with some of the prospects coming up. Playing for the Yankees, you mentioned the history. But talk to us about the current Dodgers regime, how they do things. Because we have a lot of Dodger fans listening to us. Not the ace, because, you know, he's an Angel fan. But other Dodger fans are like wondering, why do they do this? Why do they do that? Everybody thinks that they're smarter than the front office. And nobody knows what the front office is doing. What's it, and especially speaking as a guy, you and Ricky, we've talked about this, where you guys came up one way and all of a sudden the game changed while you guys were playing.
Yeah.
The Dodgers front office pays attention to every single detail, and I don't think fans understand that.
Well, I really didn't. I caught the end of it. Sorry, Josh. I caught the end of the end of it. I didn't really see it much when I was playing, even when I retired. But Josh will tell you, and I'm excited to hear this, because he kind of retired at first, went and worked for an organization in the front office, and then said, you know what, this ain't for me, I'm gonna go back and play.
Oh, that's right.
But yeah, I want to know a little bit of what it that, you know, those the stuff that goes on behind the closed doors, like obviously with you were with the Dodgers and then got a job with the Atlanta Braves.
Well, so that happened before, and it was more just to see what I wanted to do next, right? So like I was never really involved in the in-depth conversations, but I was being able to pick the brain of GMs and AGMs. But there is nobody in the industry, I think, that evaluates the total package like Andrew Friedman evaluates the total package. Every move this guy makes is so calculated, and there's such a personal level to everything that he does. Dave Roberts the same way. Bob Guerin, the bench coach, the same way. There's a feel when you walk into the Dodgers clubhouse. As for me, I was, let's just call it, the 65th man in camp. Made me feel like I was at home. They really made you feel like you were going to make that team. And from the family day that took place outside after a game, where Andrew Friedman's walking around talking to everybody, all the kids and all the wives, that's what's missing in the game, because everybody's getting so detached and so stuck behind the computers, and the personal level is going away. Now, Alex Anthopoulos is a GM that has the same thought process, no doubt in my mind. Andrew, Alex, and I'm sure I'm going to miss some, but those two guys stick out to me. And you're going to see it in with the Angels, with Perry Minasian. He's a chip off that block. It's a total package thing. And I think the Angels, because of the addition of Perry, I think it's going to they're going to be fine. But from a Dodgers perspective, the home feeling that you get when you're there is, I think, the biggest piece for me.
And Josh, when you're there with the Dodgers organization, they're doing, everybody says, oh, they do too much analytics. They do this and that. As a catcher, what do they do with the pitchers that's different than when the way you came up?
Well, I mean, everything is now with the camera, the Edgetronic cameras, the Rapsodos, the Trackmans, the Hawkeyes, all of these systems.
Hold on. Speak English. What did you just mumble right now?
Sorry. The Edgetronic camera is a camera that goes behind the pitcher's mound, and it shoots at like 2,000 clips per second or something. So it's a very slow-mo camera, okay? The Rapsodo is a machine, along with the Trackman and the Hawkeye. They're different platforms that allow pitchers to get data on their pitch profile, which would be spin rate, horizontal break, vertical break, spin access, those type of things, which I think is good. I'm not here to bash that piece of it. I think there's a helpful tool in it, but you have to be careful in putting all your eggs in one basket. And I think that's kind of what some organizations are doing. And to speak from the Dodgers' perspective, they don't do that. They use the tool. They say, here's the tool. They have people assigned to show you what each metric means. And if they think it can help you, and they'll sit down with you and talk to you. I was fascinated when I was in the minor leagues with them, and they would bring this group of sports scientists in and hook the hitters up to like what's called a motion capture, right? So you put like these little things all over your body, and then there's cords running down, and then you hit. Instead of just collecting the data, throwing it in their wherever they keep it, right? They sit down with you and they say, Josh, here we're looking at a hip deficiency when you swing. We're looking at, this is what your front elbow is doing, this is what your shoulders are doing. Here's some drills to help fix it. If you're interested in it, if you're not, we're good. Stay the course. And that's what baseball's missing, is how you translate the information versus just saying, oh, well, we have it. That means that just having it means nothing.
Wow.
I agree with that. And going back to what Josh is saying, I've always said it's, the teams that are successful, I think, are the ones that have the good mix of veteran players, good clubhouses, and analytics, and they just blend them in, and everything kind of works together. But when you, like you said, when you put all your eggs in one basket and you're just analytics, data driven, it's not going to work. You know, I mean, every guy is different. Every guy, you know, throws the ball different. Every guy prepares different. So it's okay to make certain adjustments here and there, but you have to speak to different guys, you know, differently. Not everyone is the same. And that's one of the things I learned when I went to 108 Performance, and I was trying to learn the analytical side, the movement side, the movement of the body. And it was just that. It was like, hey, you have to talk to everyone different, because one cue might not work for the other guy, and the other guy, and so on and so forth. So you got to make sure you kind of make sure they're seeing you eye to eye as a coach. I think that's very important, and have a relationship with them, because if you throw out a bunch of different numbers, you'll lose them. You'll lose the ball very easily.
I that's right, Ricky. I would say this. I was actually talking to somebody, a guy that the place I do hitting lessons. He used to manage in the minor leagues. He was a hitting coach in the minor leagues. He played in the minor leagues. And we were talking about being a hitting coach in professional baseball, for example, is it's not what you know. It's how you relate to the hitters. The best hitting coaches I had probably didn't know anything about hitting, or they knew enough about hitting to tell you what to do. But you know what they did is when you were 0 for 7 or 0 for 8 or 0 for 12, they knew how to bring you back. They knew how to pull you back in. They knew how to sit you down and talk to you and give you a relaxed feeling versus the hitting coaches in today's game. And not all of them, believe me, I would not say all of them, but there's a group of hitting coaches right now that are so mechanically and data driven. When you go 0 for 15, they don't know what to tell you other than just to pull the hit tracks up in the TrackMan data and let's work from here. But like that, be honest with you, that doesn't work.
Yeah, and it's true. And I sat around a lot of hitting coaches in my time in the big leagues, and just because I wanted to pick their brain or see what they were telling certain hitters when hitters would come in after a bad at bat or something happened, and the hitter would come in and be like, "What you see? Hey, hunt the fastball. Next at bat, hunt the fastball." That easy? Like, wow, that sounds super easy, you know? And it's like, it really is. Like, I think it's when we try and overthink stuff, overanalyze stuff on the diamond, I think that's where we start falling in trouble. Or, you know, the numbers are there for a reason. Learn to use them. Learn to use them when. And have a good blend. Like I said, it's not all just numbers. At the end of the day, in baseball, you can't take away instincts. And once you take away that, I think you're going down the wrong path.
And Tolly, you'll see that this is the first time you're doing the podcast virtually with us, and we're going to keep on doing it. Once again, if you're listening right now for the first time on YouTube, we do see your comments. We're going to use them every now and then sporadically. If they're good, we'll check in with you. Tolly, here's a comment from Jesus M. C-ball, hit-ball, simple. Is it really that simple?
I mean, it's not that simple, but it is, I will say this, it can be that simplistic. And for some guys, it has to be that simplistic. Everybody has their own cues. And Ricky, I hope you understand when I say this. I will never forget in Buffalo that year where they threw all the cameras at you. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I will never forget it. I was catching your bullpen. And there was cameras. This was before, like, all the Edgetronic cameras. This was the cameras. And I remember after the bullpen, you said, "I didn't feel good." I said, "Dude, you got to get back to just being simple. These cameras aren't going to tell you anything you don't know. You're a successful big league pitcher. There's nothing that you don't know about what your stuff is." So I think take that piece of advice and put it into hitting. Hitting does become that simple. See the ball, hit the ball. Richie Hebner used to say it all the time. A to B. How hard can it be?
Tolly, Tolly, this is interesting because first time we've talked to you, and then we've seen the evolution. And the baseball fan has gotten a lot smarter, too, because Ricky was working out at that facility, 108, right? 108 Performance in Orange County, you know, where the Ace is from. And he was working out, trying to understand what goes on in the mind of these kids. And I remember talking with Ricky, and he would tell us these 14-year-olds, these 13-year-olds, as soon as they throw, they're now looking at the Rapsodo. What are my numbers? What's my spin rate? Where you guys were coming up, it's, "Hey, how did you feel? Look good?" Right? That's what they used to ask you. Look good? Look good?
That's it.
But the kids are being trained different now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. These kids are in these facilities are like they throw a pitch and everything's filmed. Everything's on their phone. So they go back home and they analyze it on their own. And, you know, and like I said, it works for certain kids. Not all kids are getting filmed, but there's a couple that wanted to be filmed the whole time and they can take the tape home and watch it. Other kids just, you know, "Hey, I'm going to go do it naturally." And it does it. And they go and do it naturally. I think at some point our bodies, you know, we got away from certain athleticism. And I think at 108 Performance, that's what they tried to teach. It wasn't all numbers. It was like, let's get our body movement right and kind of go from there. And then, you know, I even considered making a comeback when I was going there. But it was like obviously the pandemic hit. But for a while, I was like, "All right, I want to do everything these kids are doing because I want to feel so that when I teach it, I know what I'm looking for." And so I started getting on the bump, and it was like 86, 87, 88. And the guy goes, "Hey, man, we can get you up to 95. And I was like, "Yeah, right. I never really do that ever." And he's like, "No, man. Like, he's like, your body, you still move right, you know." And they kind of went through the whole spiel. And I was like, "Hey, if you get me throwing 95, we'll host a tryout here, you know. But then obviously everything happened and they shut down the facility.
Yeah, to kind of that point, Ricky, is like, it is important to know about it. I will always say this. This holds a place in the game, holds a place in the industry somewhere, just not to the capacity that it's holding right now. It's got to come down to how do you feel? The eye test, right? I mean, all the old school coaches, it's the eye test. They can see. And you have to be able to see. You can't just look at the iPad. It's not going to paint the entire picture for you.
Oh, wait. Hold on. You're telling me that the iPad can't manage?
No, it can't manage. Well, they're trying right now. There's too many variables.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's instincts, man. Baseball's all instincts. It really is. When you take away that and you know what, I'm not here to bash numbers or anything like that. I think there's a place for them in baseball. But like I said, when your focus is on numbers, I think that's where you kind of steer it the wrong way. But when you blend them in with, I still think in a clubhouse, veterans are a big part of baseball. And we can see they're slowly kind of being pushed out. But when you hear a lot of guys talk, or you know, when I had a lot of guys reach out to me after that Sportsnet feature and say, hey man, I am the way I am with younger guys because of you and everything you taught me along the way. And I think that goes a long way, man. Even when I was doing bad, when I was going through my downfall at the end of my career, I still wasn't bitter at anyone or anything. I still come in and I was like, if I can teach a guy or make sure he knows certain things, then I've done my job.
You know, Ricky, it's called passing the baton, and that's something I always pride myself in. It is, no matter what the situation is, whether you're stuck in Double A at 30 years old or you're in the big leagues at 38, the one thing you can do is teach the younger generation, because now more than never, they need it now. They need the help. They need the guidance. No matter what they say, the game within the game has not changed, and that will never change. And I was brought up by Brian Schneider, Rod Barajas, Henry Blanco. Those group of guys taught me what to do and gave me different scenarios. We can talk about, from a Dodgers perspective, the Dodgers signing Trevor Bauer as being, wow, what a great sign. Hey, don't sleep on the Justin Turner sign. For me, that's their best sign. That's the Andrew Friedman. Hey, that's the Andrew Friedman that he knew. He knew exactly what he wanted to do. He knew it was going to take some time. But Justin Turner, that was Andrew Friedman's best sign this offseason, because he is the glue. He's what keeps that thing moving along.
And totally, that's a great point you bring up. Go ahead, Rick. Go ahead.
But then again, when you see an Edwin Encarnacion still out there, you know, a guy that's very valuable to that, to the club, to a big league clubhouse when it comes to the Latino players, you know, someone that's been there, that's done it. Yes, he had a down year, but we were talking about this earlier. 60 games is tough. It's tough. Some guys don't get going till the second half. So, you know, when I watch him and you know, he's out there still working out, I see him on social media and all that, I'm like, man, this guy would still be valuable in a big league clubhouse. It's just the knowledge that he brings, you know, to the younger guy and Josh said, passing the baton. His ego's not gonna get in his way. He's there because he's like, okay, I'm here to, I know my role, and I know Edwin personally, his feelings ain't gonna be hurt, you know, but I still think his veteran presence is gonna make a huge difference if a team signs him.
Yeah, totally.
No question, and he's skillful too. Don't forget that he's not skillful. Like, just because he's getting older, this dude can hit. So he's the guy that brings a total package, but that's a whole nother conversation for next week with the DH and that type of. I think that's what's affecting his market right now more than anything.
And totally, when we start talking about the way teams are constructed, like, look, being a GM is really easy from the couch, pitching and hitting really easy from your Twitter account, right? It's all easy when you're not part of it. But when you look at the way teams are constructed, obviously teams want to go cheaper, they want to go younger. But those veteran guys that know what it takes, they are such a big role. Your time from the Dodgers organization, you saw them having that. right? You saw that there. Like, for example, who's that young kid that they have, Keeper Ruiz, that catcher?
I know him well.
Exactly. You knew your role with Oklahoma City. You were there to make sure that this kid learns how to be a professional. That's kind of also being lost in the game, isn't it? Like, guys like you, guys like where it's, you have no ego, where you're willing to say, let me help this kid become a stud, you know, a Bull Durham reference, for lack of a better term. But sure, the Dodgers get it, don't they, when it comes to that stuff?
They do get it. I mean, that's why I was with the Dodgers, was to help Keibert Ruiz. And I roomed with the kid, and I think he got a lot out. He was motivated to learn, which is the other piece, right? Like, you can have all the veteran guys in the clubhouse you want, but if there's no motivation from the young players to learn, you're just wasting, the team's wasting their money and their time, right? But Keibert Ruiz was able to learn throughout the course of the game, and you navigate the pitcher or the catcher umpire relationship. You navigate the pitching coach catcher relationship, like the pitcher catcher relationship as well. Like, he needed help with those things, and I felt like it was a positive, and I felt like because of the willingness to learn, he succeeded in that that aspect of it.
That's it. That's the way to do it. Fire station right next door to Thule. That's what people are like leaving comments like, oh, is there a helicopter next to you? Like, nah, we hear fire stations. It's next to Thule. Nah, you know, we're fine. Thule's in his mansion in Binghamton, right?
The fire must be out.
Yeah, yeah. It's raining in L.A. That's why we're not golfing. All kinds of good stuff going on. People leaving comments. And so as we continue to do this, and if you're listening, make sure you rate, review on iTunes, Spotify. Let us know on YouTube. Also, we're going to do this podcast every Tuesday at, 10 o'clock Pacific time. That's the goal. So 10 o'clock Pacific time, 1 o'clock Eastern. I also believe it's 1 o'clock Nova Scotia time. So we'll take care of you there. So, because for our Canadian fans, it's going to stay there. Go and let people know that we're back, and it's going to be every Tuesday. Ricky's cleared out his calendar. Tolly's cleared out his calendar, so we're ready to go for you. And every single week, we're going to have a theme. Like, okay, like Tolly mentioned, next week, we're going to talk about the DH and just go. So if you want hardcore breakdown on who's going to make a roster, don't come here. If you want hardcore breakdown of, like, how is this team doing because of this, don't come here. If you want cool stories, if you want behind the scenes of what it's like being a pro ball player as we evolve, this is what we're here for. We're here for you, the fans. Now, here's another one, Tolly, that came in. Marco Favela, who's a dedicated listener. Bartolo Colon playing in Mexico. Do you have any Bart stories?
I don't. I never played with him. I missed him. I missed him with the Mets. Other than, wait, hold on, Beto. This is I might need our data guy to figure out
Marco
what batting averages.
Marco,
my batting averages off of off of Bartolo Colon, because I love hitting sinker ball guys. So I don't know. I might have never got a hit off him. I don't know, but I would like to know. I mean, I like 85, 86 mile an hour sinkers. That was my bat speed.
Marco Pelayo, if you could go to Baseball Reference and check out Josh Tolley's numbers against Bartolo Colon. And the reason I bring that up, Ricky, the last episode we had was with Danny Barreta, who was playing down in Mexico for Culiacan, the Tomateros, all that good stuff. We actually, because of us, got an invite to Orioles camp. So you come on the podcast, you get good vibes and energy for you. Ricky, when you saw Bartolo playing or signing in Mexico, like, what the hell, right? This guy just will never stop.
He'll probably never stop. No, and you sometimes see videos of him playing softball too.
Yeah,
hitting bombs. I love that.
I think he loves the game that much, and I mean, signing in with Tijuana.
Oh, he's in Tijuana? No, he's not.
Yeah, I think he signed. Yeah, I think. He,
oh, or,
did he? No. Wait. It was it him? No, no. Fernando Rodney signed in Tijuana.
Arrow?
Yeah,
I love that guy.
What, you know him?
Bartolo might be in Monclova.
Oh, Monclova?
Might be in Monclova. Yeah.
That's dangerous, right?
But,
is it Monclova where they told you not to go outside of the hotel?
It was Campeche.
Oh,
no. Yeah. I don't even know.
There was a couple places where they told you not to go outside of the hotel.
There was a couple places, yeah.
Totally. You know Fernando Rodney and the Arrow?
Yeah, I was in camp with him with the Diamondbacks when you're nicest guy in the world. When you play against him, you're a little intimidated with the cocked hat tipped up a little bit, and then he's firing the arrows. But I tell you, he is one of the nicest guys. And that goes, like, we talk about the veteran rookie conversation. This dude was there to help some younger guys in that bullpen, and he did, and he seeked guys out. Like, he had the ambition and motivation to pass the info on to the next generation.
That's cool, man. That's cool. I remember he
really was. I mean, when he was with the Rays, I'd always see him in the weight room, because we used to share weight rooms back in the day in Tampa, and nicest guy ever. And I was always wondering, like, man, this guy's intimidating as hell on the bump, you know. And so if he didn't like a swing you took off of him, he'd buzz your tower, and he didn't care. Or sometimes he just was so wild that you knew it wasn't intentionally, but and then he'd paint a fastball down and away at like 98. So it was one of those guys. But when you saw him in off the field, he was super, super nice.
Yeah, he was with the Angels his first year. He was a closer, and Socha told us, the media, that Rodney, he'd been struggling, so he's not going to close anymore. So we went and talked to Rodney. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah, so the story goes that they called him up to warm up that evening, and Rodney said, nah, I'm not the closer. No, he told him, you pay me to be closer, I'm not closing, I'm not pitching. Like, and it went on like that for a week.
Ben, Ricky, could you guys imagine that happening in today's game? Like, that just doesn't happen. These kids are scared to death. They'll get abused. They'll go 3-4 days in a row. They'll get hot the other 2 days. Like, they'll just get abused, and then and a year later they're on to the next one.
What do you mean they're scared to death?
The confrontation in the game is not the same that it used to be.
For real,
Skipper? Oh yeah. Oh, 100%. The managers used to say, "Hey, the door's open. You got a problem? Come talk to me." And you'd go in there, you'd close the door, and you never knew if you were going to come out with a black eye. That's just how it was. They weren't afraid.
Come on!
Yeah, but, like, that's what makes a good team. That's what makes a good team. That is it's 100. Beto, picture this. Effectively, 200 days out of a calendar year, you're with the same freaking people. At some point, there's going to be a fight. I mean, I was just on quarantine for 10 days, and me and my wife were at each other's neck by a couple days ago. You know? But the point that I'm really trying to hammer home is, like, that's an important piece that's gone. There's no more team meetings. I've been in team meetings, and I won't talk about them because they are team meetings privately, but I've walked out of some team meetings that were aggressive. And I don't I think that's a big piece, because that's how you get issues resolved. Instead of just letting it build up and be pent up, you have to have those. That's just how it is. Good teams, that's what good teams do, period.
You need that friction.
I think people always say, oh, yeah, they're together for 162 games. Bullshit. You're together from February all the way till the end of September. Till November, you know, if you win the World Series. So that's it's 10 and a half months. You're with the same people. You see the same people. They're like your brothers. Do you fight with your brothers? Yeah, you do. And arguments are going to happen and stuff like that. But like Josh said, that's what makes a good team. I think a lot of that stuff has been lost in today's game, where, you know, you talk to certain guys, hey, do you guys go out to dinner and like hang out, have some drinks? Yeah, no. Everyone's just, obviously we're in a different era where gaming is, everyone's into gaming, and we're going to get together and game and stuff like that.
Man, go get drunk.
So, where before it was like, you know, a certain guy, the guy who was making the big cheese on the team, you know, would say, hey, I have a dinner set up, and here you go, like, come out, and whoever wants to go shows up and stuff like that. And you know, I feel like you really don't hear stories like that anymore.
Now, because of the bubble, we saw that we're reading that with the NBA, where players used to go out and do everything else. Now, the guys are being so creative with the room service menu. Like, yeah, that's all they're allowed to do. They get to the hotel, they have to stay in the room. And even for me with boxing, when we have to go in quarantine and stay in our own bubble, it's like, damn, what are you going to do? So you don't have that interaction with people. But Tony, it's interesting what you're saying about how that niceness, everybody is really on edge where you don't want to confront, but at the same time, it's like passive aggressiveness. That sucks. Like, you got to tell people you don't like them at times.
Yeah, that's just how it goes. That's how a major league season operates, and a minor league season for that fact, is if you cannot be scared, because that's when the tension builds. That's when the frustration builds, and nobody can speak to it. And I think for me, a couple of the teams that I've been on was a common denominator on those teams was the relationship with that, what we had, such as Ricky said. I mean, geez, team dinners all the time. I mean, luckily I was young enough, I didn't have to pay for any of them. we flipped some big bills at some restaurants, but what it did was it molded us. It brought us together. Yeah. And we were one unit, as much of a cliche as that is, that's what we were. I mean, everybody clicked. It didn't matter if you were the 26th man coming up and down, or if you were the leadoff hitter and bona fide all-star. It just didn't matter. Everybody worked together.
Wait, the team dinners, everybody has to go?
No, they don't have to go.
But it's kind of disrespectful if you don't. You know, a veteran's nice enough to offer to take you out to dinner. You just did it. You know, you didn't want to miss out on a good time. And if you ate dinner and didn't want to stay for any extra curricular activities, then you just go home. You know, and that was it.
Well, that was Kobe. Remember, that was Kobe's problem when we first started with the Lakers. Shaq and the vets would be like, hey, we're going to go to dinner. Kobe's like, nah, I'm going to go back to my room. I'm going to go watch film on this. Or I'm going to go work out, do something. And they're like, well, you're not part of us.
Yeah, but that guy is wired differently.
No, but okay, he wasn't going to the extracurriculars. He wasn't going to the Century Club, but he didn't even go to the dinner.
Yeah.
And Beto, you know those guys. You know who they are. I've played with guys that are wired a little different, and that doesn't make them any worse or any better. I don't think it's black and white. I just think that, especially in baseball, in basketball, I think we are comparing apples and oranges a little bit, because baseball is so different because of the consecutive grind of games day in and day out.
Yeah.
Where, like, you've been going, if you're going to watch film, I mean, you're 0-0-4 tomorrow, just book it. Like, if you're that panicked, you're going home to watch film, you're not getting a hit maybe the rest of the season.
All right, we got an update. Dun, dun, dun. Marco Pelayo, our unofficial statistician. He is Stats Inc. He is Rapsodo.com. Marco Pelayo gives us the update on Josh Tolley versus Bartolo. What do you think you did, Tolley?
1-for-5.
Oh, yeah. Hey, 1-for-5.
I'm cheating, man.
Yeah, I know you're cheating, but for the people listening, they don't know. 1-for-5. Okay. Remember, I told you, Tolley, we're going to mess with people's minds right now. Because
you're right.
Man, you were acting like you took him deep. I was like,
Ricky, have I taken many people deep? I can probably count them who I've taken deep. Hey, Marco, thanks for throwing a single in there.
Yeah.
My whole career, I hit singles.
Yeah, 1-for-5, 2-for-K.
I like how you threw in the 2Ks, too.
Yeah. No RBIs, I guess, huh? Just a single. So 1-for-5, 2Ks. Hey, against Bartolo Colon, who is still going at the age of 65. He's down in Mexico right now. Who knows how old that guy really is? Nobody knows.
He's 65.
Yeah.
Beto, you think we should update the listeners on, like, as far as guests?
Okay, so here it is. We've been doing 52 minutes. And just to give you guys behind the scenes here, I've met Tolley once, right? Great time. Fantastic. It feels like he is related. It feels like he should be in the group chat. We'll get rid of Ace and include Tolley in there, so we'll be all right. hey, Tolley, do you have a PS5 by chance?
No, I don't. I'm not a video game guy.
Okay, good. All right. Then you can come into the group chat.
I mean, I shovel snow, and I watch baseball. That's all I do.
Oh, that's perfect. So, Tolley, when Ricky and I said, hey, Tolley's kind of thinking about doing some other stuff, we're like, well, why don't we include him with us? Let's get going. And then the text message goes back and forth. He has all kinds of ideas. He's great. So this is the first episode. We're kind of just feeling each other out to see how it would flow if we want to move forward. Tolley, we did 53 minutes and it feels like 5, man. This is good. We're onto something. I have a good energy about this. We're going to get going. And what did I tell you? We don't have to plan everything out. It's just going to naturally go, man. We're on to something.
I think we are. And I love the idea because talking about yourself can be difficult, right? Especially I had an okay career. My career was fine. But at the end of the day, I love the idea of telling stories, finding a good topic to talk about. And next thing you know, man, we'll be doing this and it'll be another 53 minutes.
Oh, because
there is so much in the game and in the industry that we can relate to. You know, I mean, from Ricky and I's playing experience to even your media experience being around teams and players, I think that avenue is what's going to really make this thing tick.
It'll be fun. So we'll do it every Tuesday at 10 o'clock. So Ricky was asking about, do we do guests? We can do guests. We can have up to 5 people on this if we want at once. It'll be great. But if we don't want to, it's cool because people are going to come and hear for the stories. So every single week we'll have it for you. Go to the Let's Go Ricky Rowe Instagram page. Let us know who you want to listen to. A couple of people mentioned George Springer. And I wrote back, yeah. And they're like, well, really? Can you? Why not? Because we can ask whoever we want, when we want. If they say no, oh, well, they're the ones missing out. You come on the show, you get good energy.
You know what? And this is because we're going to get into the subject next week about the DH. I think it would be some to bring somebody that's been a DH.
Yeah.
Or has been had experience being a DH. I think that would be worth maybe looking at a list of who would be available to be able to come in and talk.
So anybody's available. We are not Canada's podcast. We are not United States podcast. We're not Mexico's podcast. We're a worldwide podcast. So if we want to go talk, hey, Hank Conger is coaching in Korea. We can get another catcher on. We can we go to Liam Hendricks in Australia. You know, we. Somebody's playing in Italy that we know. Probably we can go get these people. No problem. We'll do whatever you want. Tolly, do you have social media?
I have an Instagram page, but it's just more for my kids. I don't. I'm not very active on it.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be very active every Tuesday at 10 o'clock here on the podcast.
That's what I'm talking about.
Last, I know you like the interaction from the fans, don't you?
I love it. I think this is great. I'm actually going to start answering all their questions, but I'm going to let the boss tell me what to do.
And this is a good one right here from Jesus M. Do pitchers like Greg Maddux, are they gone? Like, you must throw 95? Or have we seen the last of a guy throwing darts like Maddux?
I'll pass this to Ricky, and I'm sure I'll follow up. I would be anxious to listen to what he has to say because he has a different perspective because he's seen it. He has seen it change in front of him. I mean, right in front of his eyeballs. So take it away, Ricky.
I don't think they're gone. I mean, you look at a guy like Kyle Hendricks, you know, with the Chicago Cubs, who's cool. That guy can locate and when you watch him pitch, it's a thing of beauty because he's doing it, you know, at not a high velocity. He's just moving the ball, and I think it shows, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about pitching and not how hard you throw. Mm. And yes, do we like velocity? Do we like when a Nate Pearson comes in and is blowing 100, 101, 102, or 100 green like he was last night? It's fun to see those, but at the end of the day, you want to see pitching. You want to see guys locate at 92, 93, 94. And I don't think that's completely gone. I think it's just what we see on TV a lot is the velocity guys, but I think when you're able to have velocity and you're able to locate your secondary and your third pitches, I think that's the beauty of pitching. And I think there's still plenty of guys like that. I mean, Trevor Bauer, you know, he's a guy that he goes out there and he pitches and we saw what he can do a little bit of what he can do this season, you know, in his spring start. Walker Buehler's another guy. I mean, yeah, they throw hard, but those guys are still pitching and they still know what they're doing. Playing Kershaw, you know, he adjusted late in his career. He was a guy that threw hard, and now he learned how to locate different pitches and pitch to his advantages now. He doesn't have 98 in his pocket, but he's adjusting well. We saw CeCe Sabathia towards the end of his career do it too. So I don't think they're completely phased out. I think a lot of what we see on TV is obviously velocity, but if you pay attention, there's still plenty of guys that go out there and pitch.
Yeah, I'll piggyback off of that, Ricky. I couldn't agree more. I think we'd separate guys into two categories, right? You have some bullpen guys, for example, that come in just throwing 100 and have no idea where it's going and no pitchability, meaning they don't know how to command the baseball and pitch. where I thought Walker Buehler was a great example, because he is a guy with a nice 4-5 pitch mix, but what he is so good at doing is manipulating the ball, throwing it where he wants to, and he still throws 95. So I don't think you have to throw 95. I just think those group of guys are put into two categories. I think there's more pitchers in the big leagues right now that have pitch ability and that pitch, not like Greg Maddux, because that's not fair to say to a guy that's in the Hall of Fame, but command, they do command the baseball and they still throw hard. And there's guys that take pride in it. I mean, I watched Marcus Stroman pitch yesterday, and he's a guy, 92, 93, but boy, can he spin the ball. As he said in his post game yesterday, he says, I'm nasty. And like, his stuff was nasty, but he commands the baseball, and that's the pitch ability that I think is going to be more, Jesus, is going to be more important as this game starts coming full circle again.
Yeah, and when I get done with go ahead, Rick.
Well, and no, and there's another thing. Everyone wants to compare, like, Greg Maddux, like, fans, you know, you see that comparison, like, oh, like, we need another Greg Maddux. Shit, there's only one. There's not very many guys that can do what he did. You know, there's a reason why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, it's tough to compare to a guy like that. I mean, Greg Maddux at one point did throw 95 plus, and then at one point he learned how to pitch and how to manipulate the ball and how to, you know, start that sinker at your hip, as you know, if you're hitting left-handed, and have it move back inside. I mean, there's just, it's tough to compare to a Greg Maddux just because he was that special, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, when I was coming up, it was Roy Halladay. Like, man, there's only one Roy Halladay. You can't manipulate what he did. You can learn from it, but it's tough to do what some of those guys do, and that's why they're Hall of Famers.
Yeah, and Maddux, his brief time with the Dodgers, you walk in there, you're like, wait a minute, this is Greg Maddux? Like, this dude right here? Like, ultimate dad bod. And I remember we went to interview him out there, his first pitch outing with the Dodgers. He had a t-shirt that said MILF Hunter. And I'm like, are you serious? And he's standing dead straight, and he's like, hey, guys. And the camera guys from, like, the TV stations were like, let's get a tight shot. We don't want to show that shirt.
we need to get somebody. Cesar Ramos obviously was with the Padres, so he was there, and he has some cool Greg Maddux stories. I'm sure we should probably get him on, or get somebody on that played with him, because I feel like there's a lot of funny stories about him that I've heard.
There are definitely. I've heard a lot of funny stories about him. I'm not sure.
They're for air.
They may be rated X.
All of them, right?
All of them, man. I've heard some messed up stories, but I love it. You're right, Ricky. You're right. You got to let the guys that played with them tell the stories. It can't be third-hand stories.
Yes, this is be the one where we charge for to watch this episode.
Absolutely.
As we wrap up, what's it called? Javier Razo checks in. He's our golf buddy. What's up, Razo? Let's go back to the story about our friend Ace of SoCal. So earlier in the podcast, we talked about how our friend Ace of SoCal, who used to be our friend, he now is engaged and he's no longer a sports fan. Tony, do you remember this, though? That spring training, this guy, Ace, went up to you while you're on deck. He said, hey, Ricky Rosas, what's up? Do you remember that?
I remember that.
Did he really have, like, that nervous voice like the kid from The Simpsons?
Yeah. Hey, Ricky wanted me to say hi.
Meanwhile, let me call Ricky. To lock it in. You're trying to lock it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just throws you off.
Yeah, so that's what it is. Like, you're on deck, ready to go hit on the B side of the field.
Yeah. Nobody's supposed to be there.
Field 12.
Field 12, and I'm trying to get my swing right, and this guy's bothering me to say Ricky Rose says hi. But he didn't care. I was nervous why the ace was scared.
That'll do it for this week's episode with Josh Tully. We're going to do it again every single week, 10 o'clock live on YouTube. We're going to interact with you, the fans, let people know that we're back. We're get going. Let's see here. Every Tuesday, 10 o'clock, lock it in. iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, all the other places where you can listen to it. It's been fun, and we got Tony involved, man. This is cool. Tony, how you feel?
I'm fired up. This is like, I'm so excited. Ready to do another one on Friday.
Okay, let me take you guys behind the scenes. This fool says, hey, okay, we'll do that, and then we'll do another episode during the week. I'm like, first of all, hey, bro, like, I'm the one that edits it. I'm the one that does everything. Like, relax. And you're trying to cut into our golf time. Like, no. Like, relax here.
He's just mad because he can't golf. He's out there shoveling snow right now.
Yes. Hey, the summers I might be busy. I don't know.
Yeah. And the summers we take the podcast off. So we're good.
We dial it in. Let's go.
Hey, by the way, Roswell's asking who I am. That mofo owes me money.
Oh!
He better know who I am.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Rozzo, make sure you get Ricky's Venmo account. Ricky's got guys, if you owe him money, this is like the mafia stuff.
Nah, I don't want to mess with Rozzo. No,
we're good.
Oh, okay. Rozzo, I'm kidding.
We got guys in upstate New York. They'll take care of you. They'll take care of that thing. All right, so for Josh Tully and Ricky Romero, I'm Beth Durant. Is Marcus Stroman will say, I'm nasty? Nah. This podcast is nastier than Stroman, so don't worry about it. Stroman's good, but Stroman needs to get to our level because, look, we're in midseason form, bro. We are in midseason form right now. Aren't we?
This is nasty.
This is the Tully show.
No. We're going to talk DH next week.
Yeah, so next week we'll talk about the DH. We'll talk about all kinds of other stuff. We'll get going, and every single week we're here for you guys. So rate, review, subscribe, let us know. Tully has no social media, so don't worry about it. Go to the Let's Go Ricky Roll Instagram page. Leave us comments. Share it, like, all that other good stuff. Until next week, we'll talk to you soon. And Ricky, by the way, that's a sweet West Side hat you got going, man.
Thanks, dude.
That is a nice one.
I just got it.
Man,
you need my address?
Tully, you can't get a West Side hat on the East.
You're not from the West Side, dude.
It's just part of the East Coast beef. Okay, I'll make one with the East Coast then. That's what I'm going to do. Now, it's a competition.
All right, we'll talk to you guys.
I loved it.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for listening to another edition of Let's Go.